listening to a special edition of Real Lit, where today, literary analysis takes a time out and bracketology takes the court. In the spirit of March Madness, your hosts are seeding, as opposed to citing, and pitting eight of the book-to-film adaptations they've covered against each other in a no-holds-barred tournament of taste. This is Shot Callers, the Real Lit Bracket episode. Six categories, eight films, zero chill. And may the best adaptation survive the madness.
Welcome to a special bonus episode of Real Lit. Today, we're trading close reads for cutthroat competition.
That's right. It's March Madness, Owls of Palace style.
Technically, it's April, Mackenzie.
Nah.
Still, your points have taken. We haven't crowned a men's or women's champion just yet, so bracket season's still in effect. Even though I'm pretty sure everybody's bracket's been busted. Thanks, Arkansas.
And William and Mary.
Oh, how could I forget? That's a great underdog story, isn't it? Your team's still in?
Yes, my bracket is still going. Florida Gators.
Why in the world you pull for Florida?
Married into it, but proudly.
Fair enough. My team's gone.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's
tough. The whole state of Alabama is with you.
Except for that one little corner.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Auburn just has to still be in it, huh?
Good for them, though.
I mean, you know, our dynasty fell in football. Four-loss season is horrific.
I say good for them, but I don't want to play them, so.
Fair.
But speaking of the Elite Eight.
Man, we've been busy, haven't we?
March has been chaos. Time is a construct. I don't know where it goes.
We definitely don't have enough of it in the day, I can tell you that. Yeah, March is notoriously busy for academics.
Yes, feels like it was just March 1st. Now we're in April. Things are finally kind of getting back on schedule.
Maybe.
That's what we're going
to
say.
I said that if I could just make it to spring break. And I made it to spring break, and I came back, and the next week was busier.
Yes, absolutely.
awful. But yeah, I think we do have time to breathe now. However, we have not had time to prepare for our promised Sin City episode of Real Lit.
Yes, we're still working on prepping our Sin City episode. But Stephen had the amazing idea yesterday.
You flatter.
Oh, well, it was an amazing idea. And today we've taken the eight book to film adaptations we've covered so far and dropped them into a series of brackets. Right, best book, best film, best adaptation, and our personal favorite.
Your personal favorite.
Most hated character.
You love it, right?
I do. I love to talk characters.
Nothing says literary scholarship like holding a grudge against fictional people.
My students definitely think so.
I'm sure you bring that into the class too, huh?
Absolutely, I do. They love to hate a character.
So is it Jay or Daisy?
Both.
She's teaching Greg Gatsby this week.
I am. And we are definitely, well, really, we're dissecting Nick Carraway. Mostly right now. Taking the nuance into the narrator's
personality. Unreliable narrator.
Yes, we're debating whether he's reliable
or not. A lot like Rochester. I'm doing Wide Star Gossel Sea this week. And I stole everything from your close read.
Oh, that's totally
I gave you credit. I didn't steal. I cited my sources.
No.
We're digressing. We should pause and clarify something. Yes, we've done 10 episodes, not counting the bonus ones. And 10 is not a good number for this sort of bracket. There's not an Elite 10. It's Elite 8, right? Mm-hmm. We decided we'd trim a couple. Zombie Strippers, easy choice. Not a good film.
Yeah. Bye. So bad.
I like the Ionesco play. Don't get me wrong.
Yes, but and we did include him, Ionesco, in our most hated character bracket.
The other Ionesco. Yeah, the strip club owner, not the French playwright.
Yes. But
yeah, it was an easy one to trim. The other choice was tough, though, right? We were looking through the films. But then we decided to get rid of Stardust. You know, we both enjoyed that book and film. But what we did not know at the time we were recording it was the very disturbing allegations that had surfaced against Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, we do want to take a quick moment here. We recorded that Stardust episode before the recent allegations about Neil Gaiman surfaced. Since then, we've made the decision not to include the book or film in this episode. Not because the work isn't worth discussing, but because we didn't feel right giving it further exposure at this time. It's important to us to be thoughtful about what we platform, when, and be respectful to all of our listeners.
Right. You couldn't have said it better. So now we have our Elite Eight pre-selected in each category.
Yes, each bracket has been seeded using a specific metric. Thank you, Stephen. Box office, fidelity, literary acclaim, and good old screen time. But to win, that's where our taste comes in. instincts, and incredibly subjective opinions, of course.
We each came in with our own choices for who should take the crown, but we'll be deciding the winners together, live, without knowing each other's picks in advance. Mm-hmm. If we disagree, and we might, we'll argue our case and come to a consensus, or at least throw verbal elbows until one of us caves.
Yeah, it's going to be unpredictable, possibly petty, and definitely a little chaotic.
In other words, it's going to be a blast. I hope we're still friends after this.
Of course. So the brackets are locked, our reputations are at risk, and we're about to pit post-colonial fiction against people getting gutted on the 4th of July by sharks or hook-handed slashers, take your pick.
We got vendettas, villains, and one very punchable mayor.
Mm-hmm. The court is waxed, the takes are flaming, and the books are open. Let the bracket battles begin.
All right. Got yours ready?
I'm ready, but I'm conflicted.
I think you knew where I was going with this one.
Let's
not spoil it, but I think you already know this one. So essentially for best film, it's exactly what it says. It is the best film that we think we have covered. So we will put those head to head. The way we seeded it was very simple. This is the one that is quantitative and not qualitative. The others require a little bit of a judgment call. This one, we're going box office. Box office adjusted for inflation. So the way that puts the lineup is, we'll go through the seeds 1 through 8 of every one of these. Jaws, when adjusted for inflation, has the biggest box office. The Birds comes in second. Die Hard in third. I Know What You Did Last Summer, fourth. The Woman in Black, fifth. Like Water for Chocolate, that surprised me.
Yeah.
Comes in sixth. Because this is domestic box office, I should stress, not worldwide. And that's a Mexican film. I was just shocked that Wonder Boys hit this low.
Right.
Wonder Boys is seventh, and then Wyatt Sargasso C bringing up the eighth seed. However, the way that it's going to advance is just which one is the better cinematic achievement per our impeccable tastes.
Oh, of course. This one was easier for me in the beginning.
Yeah, the first few matchups not that hard.
Yeah. I don't know. Some of them were, though.
I don't think so.
The last two, though.
Oh, maybe. All right, so let's just go bracket one, or matchup one. Jaws versus Wyatt Sargasso C.
Jaws.
Absolutely. Jaws. I like those films. I know that they're uneven. Oh, we should mention that too. We are, because we did when we covered Wyatt Sargasso C, combined the 1993 film and the 2006 mm-hmm. film, talked about both. We're just sort of taking those both as kind of a single entity and judging the merits of both. Either way, neither one of those is going to beat Jaws. Jaws is...
It's
a predator.
Definitely the winner.
So we move over to the second bracket, the Birds versus Wonder Boys.
I'm the Birds.
Wonder Boys.
No.
Wonder Boys smokes it.
What?
Yes. The Birds is Alfred Hitchcock's weakest output, I think, or at least one of them.
What?
It's a good film. These are all good films, right?
I think acting-wise, maybe the Wonder Boys was better for me, but... cinematically, like imagery-wise,
the special effects don't hold up. I mean...
I love pre-2000. I love it.
Well, Wonder Boys was 2000. It's almost pre.
I don't know.
All right, who's going to back down? All right, taking all of Hitchcock's oeuvre, you got to put the Birds way down there, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he had years to grow. I don't...
All right, make your case for the Birds.
I'll concede.
Okay. And I promise.
I'll concede on bracket two.
I promise I will back down the next time. Or not the next time, but at least one time we disagree. I'm just standing firm on Wonder Boys.
Because it was my hardest
pick. Okay, that's fair. And it was hard for me, too. I like the Birds. Don't get me wrong. And you know, I study animal attacks, so I realize the irony. Of course, I let Jaws through.
Yeah.
I love Wonder Boys so much, and I think it did not get the flowers that it deserved. So you're getting it on Real Lit, Wonder Boys. All right, next bracket, Die Hard versus Like Water for Chocolate. I chose Like Water for Chocolate.
I chose Die Hard.
Wow.
I know.
I cannot believe this. We're going to disagree yet again.
I know.
All right, Die Hard is the probably best action film ever made. Definitely the best Christmas film. I know. I know that hot take.
And honestly, this was really difficult for me.
Because you love Like Water for Chocolate.
I loved Like Water for Chocolate.
I think I'm being more artsy and film studies kind of than...
I think Die Hard's just more unique. I mean...
More unique than a woman's whose passion goes into food?
Everything's fantasy now, though.
Ah, okay. I can handle it. Here, let me get my pen. When we disagree, I will alter my bracket.
And maybe it's because I hadn't seen Die Hard. And so I did not know the cultural phenom. And after I watched it, I loved it so much.
Okay. We'll take Die Hard. Okay. That is going to change my next bracket because I had Like Water for Chocolate winning that one. Beating Wonder Boys. So I'm going to have to redo the rest of my bracket. I did. Yeah, and you know how much I love Wonder Boys. I just made a case for it. So, oh well. So let's move over to the fourth bracket, first of all. I Know What You Did Last Summer versus Woman in Black. Woman in Black.
Woman in Black. Again, for sure.
I kind of like I Know What You Did Last Summer, but Woman in Black is a... And that one almost is similar, at least they're horror films.
You have to respect the single acting, like setting played more of a character
yeah,
than Woman in Black.
Absolutely.
And that, to me, just put it over the top.
Yeah, we're good. We're in agreement on that one.
Yes.
So, we got the final four then. Jaws, Wonder Boys, Woman in Black, Die Hard. Jaws versus Woman in Black.
Jaws.
Wonder Boys versus Die Hard. I'm still going Wonder Boys.
I concede to Wonder Boys.
Okay.
In that.
Yeah. Wonder Boys versus Jaws. This one's going to hurt.
I'm going Jaws. I'm confident in Jaws.
Yeah. Jaws, absolutely.
I mean, I've never questioned that.
And like I said before, we're going to put our own opinions and spins in it, and sometimes just enjoyment, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that Jaws is a better crafted film. It may be still, but I just like it better. It's my favorite film of all time.
Pre-2000, you've got me. I mean...
Matter of fact, I'm happy with this bracket because Jaws and Wonder Boys... Jaws is my favorite film, and Wonder Boys probably comes in at three. So I am happy to see those two pitted against each other.
Yeah. And it's hard when you're looking at, you know, family kind of action versus academic... dark.
Right, I get it, but okay, we got it. So we've crowned a winner in best film.
Winner of best film.
Let's go to best book.
All right, so for best book, The Seating is by Literary Acclaim.
And again, this is just sort of our estimation of how we think the critics, the stuffy us, basically, would rank these.
We are using some Owl's Perch here.
Well, that's for our winners, right?
For our winners.
Only Literary Acclaim can't come into it because we would be the 1 through 8. Yeah, we wouldn't have the brackets, right? So, yeah, we've got what we're going to call the Owl's Perch, stealing that from our other episode. Mm-hmm. Our Owl's Perch on this one.
So for Owl's Perch, we're going to talk about craft, language, structure, form, things like that. Also, thematic depth, cultural impact and innovation, lasting influence and relevance, and how well we personally like it.
You got to put that personal part in there. That's kind of the wild card, right?
Yeah. Got to be scholars.
All right, so the way we seeded this one, assuming, again, this is debatable, but we are literary critics, what we do for a living. So I think we kind of got some authority to speak here.
Yeah.
So the way that we seeded this one, Wyatt Sargasso, seed number one. Great book. Mm-hmm. Like Water for Chocolate at 2, Wonder Boys at 3, The Birds 4, Woman in Black 5. All those are pretty critically acclaimed. Then we get to Jaws, the novel, which is not as critically acclaimed. I Know What You Did Last Summer, and then that turd of a book, Nothing Lasts Forever, by Roderick Thorpe, which Die Hard was based on.
So let's start with bracket one. Wyatt Sargasso, C, and Nothing Lasts Forever.
Wyatt Sargasso,
C. Wyatt Sargasso,
C. Anything would have beaten that one. Yeah, it's just not a good book.
Wasn't my favorite.
No.
So, you know, done and done.
Easy choice.
Bracket number two, Like Water for Chocolate, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like Water for Chocolate.
Like Water for Chocolate. Another easy. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Then we get to three for Steven. Wonder Boys and Jaws. That was hard.
It was hard. Wonder Boys.
Wonder Boys? Same.
All right. And we co-taught Jaws.
I loved the book, too. It arguably more than the film, actually. Which really? Makes this kind of hard for me.
I don't think it's that great of a book. I like it. I don't think it's that great, literally speaking, but...
That's fair. What got me was the structure and form and, you know, just wasn't as unique as Wonder Boys is.
Right. Okay, that's agreed. Bracket four?
Bracket four, The Birds and Woman in Black.
We're probably going to disagree. I say Woman in Black.
I also said Woman in
Black. Oh, really? Wow.
It was hard for me, though. I just, honestly, that one came down to enjoyment for me.
Same. And I don't know. I enjoyed The Birds. I just don't think it's as good as people make it out to be. Hot take.
I think maybe if I had read it when it was published and not after many of the tropes have been overused now, I think that impacts my thoughts on it.
Fair.
So first, let's go with Wyatt Sargasso, C, versus Woman in Black.
And the final four?
Wide Sargasso Sea. Amazing. We are on track.
Uh-huh.
And then second, Like Water for Chocolate versus Wonder Boys.
Like Water for Chocolate, too. Oh, my gosh. We agree.
Wow.
Who would have thought we'd have been literally in sync?
I mean.
I kind of get that. That was to be expected, I think.
Kind of just amazing.
Film-wise, not so much, but literally, yeah, we're there.
You're right.
Well, let's see who wins.
I have Wide Sargasso Sea.
I do, too.
It's amazing.
It is one of my all-time favorite books.
And me, too.
Just going back and teaching it has given me an entirely different and deeper appreciation for it. Y'all, if you've not read it.
I love it.
First of all, you got to read Jane Eyre first, really, and that's a chore. But not a bad book. It's rewarding to read Jane Eyre. But then Wide Sargasso Sea, you're just like, dang, this is writing.
Yeah.
This is why God invented literature.
Like Water for Chocolate is just more enjoyable. Wide Sargasso Sea, I respect and appreciate academically, too. So it was an obvious winner for me.
It was tough for me, actually. I really like Water for Chocolate, too. It's up there.
Yeah.
Particularly innovation. You know, that book is so well written and how it's structured into 12 months of the year, one for each month, and then the recipe at the front. That's so well done.
Very, very strong option.
Just don't mess with Jean Rhys. I love everything she's written.
Well, that was a fun bracket. Ended right perfectly for us.
And perfect for you. That look what's next.
Most hated character.
I tell you what, I'll let you introduce this one too.
And we have some hateable ones.
Yeah, we do. So we seeded them in a very unique way here. This was tough, right?
Right. And they're seeded by screen time, which is a fair, objective way to seed them.
That one actually is quantifiable, but there's no way I'm going with a stopwatch.
So, no.
So I kind of estimated these, and I think we're pretty good.
Right.
So, and to advance in each one of these brackets, this may be the one where, like, if you lose, that's a good thing.
Right. It means you're not the most detestable.
Right.
First, Edward Rochester.
Who's one of the main characters. That makes sense.
Yeah. Wide Sargasso Sea, pretty much two screen time players, you know?
Right, yeah.
And then Barry Cox from I Know What You Did Last Summer, who's just stinks.
Yeah, he does stink. Here's where our zombie strippers comes back into play.
Yep, Ian Esko.
I think we took Wonder Boys out, right? Because who can you hate in Wonder Boys?
There's just not a clear antagonist.
I mean, maybe Sarah Gaskell because she's having an affair, but I like Sarah Gaskell.
Yeah.
I can forgive her. I mean, she's married to that boring stick in the mud. I don't blame her for having an affair.
They're all complex.
They're complex. That's a good way to put it. So, yeah, we put in Ian Esko there because he's a strip club owner and zombie strippers, played by Robert Englund. Very well played. I mean, he was the one person in that film that could act.
He's just stinky.
Yeah, he just was not a good guy.
And then fourth, we have Mama Elena. Ugh. From Like Water for Chocolate. And then five, we have Ellis.
This, I was stopping to point out there. We didn't choose Hans Gruber. We chose Ellis.
That's true.
I kind of like Hans Gruber in a weird sort of way.
I can appreciate a great villain.
Yeah, he's not hateable. I mean, I hate what he does, but he's so interesting as a character. Ellis, on the other hand, just a sleazeball.
Ellis.
Yeah.
From Die Hard.
Yep.
And then six, Daniel Causeway.
Another from Wide Sargasso Sea.
Yes.
This may be Antoinette's half-brother, but we don't really know. Is he lying? Anyway, that guy.
He's just a troublemaker.
He is. And he starts the whole disillusion of that. He wants money, but that's about it.
He's very mean. And then seven, we have Larry Vaughn, who big stinks.
Yeah, big stinks. I like the way you put that.
And then eight, Jeanette Humphrey.
Yeah.
From Woman in Black.
It's kind of weird that she's got the least screen time out of all of them, and she's the titular character and really what drives the entire narrative. But just physically on screen, very little.
Yeah, and she catalyzes all the events, so she deserves to be there. So bracket one, we have Edward Rochester versus Jeanette Humphrey.
I went Jeanette Humphrey.
I went Rochester.
Are you serious? The Woman in Black kills children.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I get her motivation.
I get Edward's motivation. Well, I mean, not even motivation. What? I get his backstory. He's a product of his time. He thinks he's doing the right thing by locking her in the attic.
But, I mean, that was my most difficult one.
Okay, so, I'm willing to backtrack. But
I'm willing to concede as well. That they were very even for me. It was my most difficult
choice. Why don't we take your concession then?
Okay,
and go with Humphrey. So your bracket now is going to change radically.
Humphrey. Okay.
So bracket two, Barry Cox versus Larry Vaughn. That one's easy.
Larry Vaughn.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like Barry, but he's just a jerk.
He's just a teenager.
And he gets killed. I mean, Yeah, you know, I mean, yes, he's unlikable, but he's not the antagonist. Larry Vaughn, on the other hand, horrible, horrible human being.
Yes. And Barry gets his comeuppance. I mean, Vaughn does kind of too, but we don't really know.
In the novel, I mean, yeah. You've got the assumption the mafia's going to do something to him. But
then bracket three, Ian Esco and Daniel Causeway.
This one's kind of tough for me, actually.
Because they're both so...
sleazy. And they're both driven by the desire for money.
Right.
I said Ian Esco.
I also said Ian Esco. Right. Because he exploits women. So Daniel Causeway is exploiting his potential half-sister. But Ian Esco does it on the regular.
And maybe lover. In the book. We got to talk about that today.
Gross.
In class. It does. He says, give my sister a kiss like I used to, or something like that. It's really messed up. Anyway.
And then final bracket four, Mama Elena versus Ellis.
I got Mama Elena.
Mama Elena 100%.
Ellis is sleazy and annoying and cocky and probably a narcissist, but Mama Elena is...
brutal.
Ugh, I don't like that woman.
Me either.
All right, so now we're final four.
Let's go ahead and do Larry Vaughn versus Ian Esco.
Okay, we'll go with that bracket first. I said Ian Esco.
What?
I did.
I got Larry Vaughn.
I mean, I'll concede. Larry Vaughn.
Thank you. He exploits an entire town population.
So does Ian Esco, technically. He lets the zombie breakout continue.
Yeah, but...
for profit, for financial gain. They're really a lot the same.
That's true.
But I'll take Larry Vaughn. I'll concede that one. All right. So Mama Elena versus Janet Humphrey. You got to make another decision because your bracket changed. Who did you have winning?
It did not. It's Mama Elena.
Okay. So you had Mama Elena beating Rochester.
I did.
Would you say Mama Elena beats Janet Humphrey then?
They're also similar.
They are.
Yeah.
But think of how many more deaths Janet Humphrey has been responsible for.
But Janet Humphrey would never destroy her own child.
Not her own child, but
other
children.
But Mama Elena does.
Well, she tries to. She curses her.
Right? Yeah. She doesn't care anything about her own kids.
The kid doesn't exist, technically. But well, if you've not watched these episodes and seen these films,
yeah,
you're going to be like, what the heck are they talking about? That's good. Go back and listen to those episodes, right?
And something can sate Janet Humphrey. Nothing can sate Mama Elena.
You're right.
Nothing will please her.
Okay. I'll go Mama Elena. I'll give you that one.
Nice.
So we got Mama Elena versus Larry Vaughn. Who's the winner? I'm thinking, so you go ahead, because both of mine changed for the end.
I have my winner as Mama Elena.
I got Larry Vaughn, man. I mean...
and it's a similar reason. Larry Vaughn does love his wife.
Okay, that's right. Mama
he
Elena's
his wife.
Sort of just...
she hates everybody.
Yeah, she's evil for no good reason that we can find out.
Yeah, and that makes me upset.
Okay, I'll give you that. What is it? Motiveless malignancy? That Samuel Taylor Coleridge says? Yeah.
That's
all right.
A word.
So Mama Elena wins most hated character.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those quote-unquote underdog moments.
I think it is. You know, we talk about the bracket busters and the Cinderella stories. I did not see that one coming.
I like it.
Which is interesting because we go to best supporting actor. And by the way, we're not separating by actor, actress. We're just throwing them all together and doing one category supporting and then one regular actor. But Mama Elena, the actress who portrays her, is actually on here because she does a darn good job in the role, right?
Yes.
So here, we did not, I will say, for this particular category, we did not have one from each film represented. So we've got a few that double up. The way that we seeded this one, again, a bit arbitrary, but we seeded this through recognizability. And this was hard because a lot of these, I'm just thinking like, who would know these people? I'm like, me.
Yeah.
I think maybe the first two or three most people might know. I don't even know about number three, but then when we get to the others, you might know the faces of some,
yeah,
like number four, but let's go ahead and get to those. Kieran Hines is the first one. I think he's pretty well known.
Yeah.
Tony nominated, Oscar nominated. He was in Harry Potter. There Will Be Blood. He was in Rome, the HBO series. So I think people would see him. He's known for the theater and for film. Mm-hmm. So Kieran Hines, of course, plays Sam Daly in The Woman in Black, right? The guy who helps Harry Potter out. Harry Potter.
That's fair.
That's a Freudian slip. Second, we have Jane Addams, who plays Ula in Wonder Boys. She never forgets a drink, and Grady Tripp never forgets an Ula. Love that line. But she's recognizable to indie fans, some TV audiences, I guess. Did some really good, like Happiness is one, if you've not seen it, you should. It's a really good film. She never got mainstream famous, but you know, if you like indie films, you'll know her. Third, my celebrity crush. Molly. Yeah. Rowena King, who plays Amelie in the 1993, we should say, adaptation of White's Argosso Sea. Not a household name in the U.S., but if you watch any BBC, you've seen her in something, I guarantee you. The next one, Devereaux White, and I hope I'm saying that name right. I didn't know this guy's name, but you dang sure know the face. It's Argyle from Die Hard. We love him, right? Mm-hmm. We put him there just because his face is so easily recognizable. The next one is Claudette Maya, who plays Gertrudis in Like Water for Chocolate. She's pretty well known in Latin American cinema, but again, for U.S. audiences, probably unknown unless we'll talk about it. You remember that scene. The next one, Regina Tournay, Mama Elena in Like Water for Chocolate yet again. She's not really well known at all, really. I mean, maybe older audiences in Latin America would know of her, but not many. Claudia Robinson after that, who played Christophine in the, again, 1993 adaptation of Wide Sargasso Sea. What a great performance.
Fantastic.
But she's not very well known. And then lastly, we have Richard Knox. Again, this is a guy whose name I did not know, had to look up. He plays, actually, we don't know what the real name of him is, his character anyway. Speaking of Ula, he plays Vernon Hardapple, as they assume his name is in Wonder Boys. And again, if you've not seen it, you'll not know the humor that is there. But a great role, very memorable, even though there's a very little bit of screen time, which is really the very definition of supporting actor, right?
Yep.
So let's get to it. Kerrion Hines versus Richard Knox, 1-8. What do you think? Sam Daly versus Vernon Hardapple.
Kerrion Hines.
I said Richard Knox.
Ah!
All right, I can concede there. Yep. That's a very small role. I just think he's so good in it.
Yeah.
When he jumps on the hood and then he turns around and takes a bow.
Yeah.
Somebody jumped on your car with their butt. It's just so good. But okay, I'll concede. Richard Knox. Or excuse me, Kerrion Hines. Change that on my bracket. All right, second bracket. Jane Addams versus Claudia Robinson. This is Ula versus Christophine.
Christophine.
Yeah.
I got Claudia Robinson.
I have Claudia Robinson.
I thought she was stellar.
She was so good. I love Jane Addams. And she's wonderful. But again, that role is just so small.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. But also, just Claudia Robinson is just so good. Speaking of White Sargasso Sea and celebrity crushes, Rowena King versus Regina Tournay.
Rowena King.
Rowena King.
Facial acting, superior.
So good. I mean, she has that stare. It's a smolder. Matter of fact, when I was taking notes on White Sargasso Sea, I wrote down, "This is smolder." I can look at my notes and I was like, that doesn't make grammatical sense, but it also kind of makes sense, right?
Yep.
So, all right, we're in agreement there. Kerrion Hines versus Claudette Maillet.
I think we're about to disagree.
Uh-oh.
I've got Devereaux White.
Yeah, we're going to disagree.
Yeah.
I'm not backing down on this one.
I understand.
I know you love Argyle.
And that's why I will concede. I will concede because you conceded to my first and I entirely understand.
Okay. It's just, I mean, she's amazing.
She's amazing. It was hard for me genre-wise to combine comedy versus,
I get that,
this very serious, sultry role. So.
And I did take that into consideration because comedy is hard to do.
Yeah.
But this is just such a good, serious role that I got to give it to her.
I understand.
So, all right. Bracket has changed completely. Kerrion Hines versus Claudette Maillé. Now you got to make a choice.
I give it to Claudette.
I do too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like... I mean, I don't say I didn't like Kerrion Hines. It was a good performance. Just...
It was also short.
Out of the eight that we have here, I think his is my least favorite, or least spectacular, I should say, out of the bunch. How about that? All right, we go to the other side then. Claudia Robinson versus Rowena King. We got an all-Wide Sargasso Sea.
Very difficult.
Very difficult, because Christophine, man, she's so good in that film.
I went back and forth a lot.
I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I knew.
Is it Rowena?
It's Rowena King, absolutely.
I went with Claudia, but...
No, I'll concede this one.
Okay.
I think it may be partially my celebrity crush.
Well, for me, it was Rowena's facial acting is what I admired so much. And then when I think of Claudia, I think of all of it. You know, the swishing of the skirts, the eye looks, just all of it.
That line, smile like that again, I'll mash your face like a plantain. Oh, that was so good. Yeah. All right, I'll give it to you. Claudia Robinson. All right, we got our final then. Claudette Maillet versus Claudia Robinson. A lot of Claudes in there.
Mm-hmm.
I know who I've got. Who you got?
You've got Claudette.
I have Claudette Maillet, absolutely.
I have Claudia.
Ooh. All right, let's talk about it. I'm open to discussion here. Because this was a really hard one for me.
Yeah.
That scene You know that scene.
That scene.
In Like Water for Chocolate. Matter of fact, I mentioned this on our podcast. We talked about it. Claudette Maillet in an interview said, I still get people that come up and go, hey, you're the one that did that scene. And if you've not seen the film, when you do see the film, you'll know exactly what scene we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's brave. I mean, very brave, fearless. Somehow she manages to channel humor and sensuality and passion and almost like a heartfelt, I mean, there's something else going on there. It's just every emotion. I had all the feels in that. I'm not being prurient either. I mean, I know it's a nude scene. Mm-hmm. It's not even that. Although I think that's part of it, the bravery and just the emotional rawness with the physical rawness. And it's not just that. She does come back and there's comedic timing in that, right? I don't know. Go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I agree with everything you said. And I think the bravery definitely comes in a large role for why I respect her so much. Claudia Robinson, to me, was essential to the plot. Mm. She's essential to the plot progression, and she's essential to all other character developments. So you can't take her away. Like, you don't have a movie without her.
Right. Well, but if you had another actress in there.
Yeah.
But could another actress carry it the way she did?
Because I don't think so.
When I read the book, I see her as Christophine.
Right.
Think about the 2006 adaptation.
Yeah, it's not.
She's okay. She's serviceable, but she's not memorable.
Absolutely.
You remember Claudette Robinson.
Right. And that's why I think Claudia Robinson really became that character.
Okay, I'll concede. Claudia Robinson, congratulations.
Claudia Robinson.
You win the Best Supporting Actress. All right, let's move on to the Outstanding Performance.
Outstanding Performance.
Again, we seeded through recognizability.
Yes, recognizability.
And there will be some that people actually recognize in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of these names became huge after the fact, right? So we have Robert Downey Jr., right? Franchise face of Marvel, Iron Man, global icon. Most of my students' favorite when I ask, who's your favorite superhero? Right?
Mine too.
Captain America girl myself.
Wrong side of the Civil War.
I know.
I never knew we disagreed this much until this episode.
But that's some of the best conversation.
It is. We're academicians, right? So we can disagree. We know how to do it.
Right. In second, we have Daniel Radcliffe, the boy who lived. Still a household name, even years post-Potter.
Yep.
Again, we call him Harry Potter.
No accidentally, offense to Daniel I accidentally Radcliffe. Did.
No, you did phenomenally in this film, Daniel Radcliffe, but you were Harry Potter. And then three, we have Alan Rickman, beloved as both Hans Gruber and Snape.
Speaking of Harry Potter.
Another Potterhead. Legendary man. Sarah Michelle Gellar, who we did gush over in that episode.
Yeah.
A full 1990s vibe in Buffy, Vampire Slayer, plus horror, a lot of horror credibility with multi-generational recognition.
Yeah. Fair.
And then five, Robert Shaw. Incredible, but definitely more name known to older cinephiles than the general public.
Right. I mean, a lot of the younger generation has seen Jaws, but if you just say Robert Shaw, they're not going to immediately recognize the name, whereas, you know, my dad immediately knows everything he's been in. Speaking of which.
Six, we have Tippi Hedren. Classic star, but not as widely recognized by younger audiences unless they're Hitchcock buffs, which there are a few.
Sure, and younger audience.
Right.
Just so you know, Tippi Hedren's daughter is Melanie Griffith.
And that helps.
Melanie Griffith's daughter, because a lot of younger audience doesn't even know who she is. Y'all, seriously, go back and watch some films. But Melanie Griffith's daughter, Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson.
You'll know them.
That's
so
becoming a household
Tippi name. Hedren is Dakota Johnson's grandmother.
And then seven, we have Rebecca Hall, respected but still flying.
Shame on you people.
Right.
Shame on you people who do not know her. She was also in Iron Man 3. There's another connection.
And then eight, Rumi Cavazos.
Yep.
Fantastic in Like Water for Chocolate, as everyone is. But little visibility in the U.S. pop culture overall. So bracket number one.
This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. and Rumi Cavazos. Very different.
Very different. And of course, this is Robert Downey Jr. as Terry Crabtree in Wonder Boys, not Iron Man.
Yeah.
Rumi Cavazos, of course, Tita.
I've got Rumi Cavazos.
I do too. It was hard
because
I love Robert Downey Jr. I love I love Wonder Boys. I love his role. Smarmy little book editor. But Rumi Cavazos, oh my gosh. She is so good in that film. You talk about facial acting.
Yeah.
Her expressions, incredible. So yeah, I have no problem.
Yep. Amazing.
I mean, it hurt a little, but it was an easy choice.
Right. Bracket number two, Daniel Radcliffe. and Rebecca Hall.
It's not hard. Rebecca Hall.
Rebecca Hall.
She's so good in that film.
Yeah. I mean...
She...
And I love Daniel Radcliffe. I feel bad because I'm like, oh, he's just Harry Potter. He's not.
No, he's great. Good. He's great in that film. But she, you know, if the 93 film has great supporting actors in Claudia Robinson and Rowena King, the 2006 adaptation, I mean, she is Antoinette Causeway.
Right.
And she plays it so vulnerably, so quiet. You know, it's a role I think that you could kind of push over the top, and she doesn't. Yeah, she, in a lot of ways, she carried that film. Because it's a BBC adaptation. The budget is not as high. It's mostly indoors. You don't get that lush vegetation like you do in the 93 film. It's really her acting and just her performance that I think makes that film successful. So, yeah, glad we're on the same page.
Absolutely. Bracket 3. This is one where I wrote bro. Like,
really? You had trouble. I didn't.
I mean, at the end, I didn't. But
go ahead.
Upon first, Alan Rickman.
Yeah, all right, we're in agreement.
Alan Rickman over Tippi Hedren.
Okay, we're in agreement. And again, there's no shade at Tippi Hedren. It's just...
no shade.
She did not bring the gravitas to that role that Alan Rickman did to his.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Agreed. In bracket 4...
This one hurt, but it was a clear choice.
Sarah Michelle Gellar and Robert Shaw.
Shaw.
I put Sarah Michelle Gellar.
What? Captain Quint? Like, there's a reason we picked him out of all the actors. He's not really the main character of Jaws, but he's the best performance by a long shot.
You know what? I can see, because I realized that I had some bias in this on versatility. So, and it's outstanding performance, and that's not correct of me. I need to focus on these singular films that we are discussing.
Right. You're thinking about her whole career.
And it was just really hard for me not to, but I know that's what this is, so...
It hurts.
I concede to Robert Shaw.
I love Buffy, one of my favorite shows of all time.
Right.
I'm a member of a scholarly organization called Buffy Plus Studies. I published on that particular TV show. So I love Sarah Michelle Gellar, but Robert Shaw takes it.
But between Lumi Cavazos and Robert Shaw.
Oh, we're going to fight, I guess. I have Robert Shaw.
Lumi Cavazos.
All right, I'll concede that one. You were nice and conceded the last one.
Thank you, because I was prepared to die on that hill.
Okay.
And then we have Rebecca Hall and Alan Rickman.
Rebecca Hall. It was hard. Don't get me wrong. This one took a while. This would be where I wrote bro if I wrote bro, but I don't say bro.
I chose Alan Rickman.
Oh, I mean, it's so hard.
It is.
This is the toughest one I had. I
love villains
I do too. But Rebecca Hall, she breaks my heart. Like, I think now when I read the book or when I'm teaching it, I feel even more empathy towards Antoinette and her plight because of the way Rebecca Hall plays her. And you got to take into consideration, that's not her accent. She is doing a 19th century Creole accent.
Yeah, I concede to that point.
Okay.
I concede to that point. That's a strong point.
But go ahead, make your case for Rickman.
I mean, a villain is just such a dynamic character. And he doesn't make us hate him. You know, he's a villain that we realize we should hate, but we do not. And I think that's a very special skill. Like Hannibal Lecter. Like Hannibal Lecter eats people, but Anthony Hopkins makes it to where you don't hate him.
That's fair. I mean, that's an elevated performance. I can only name a handful of villains that do that. And I was about to say he's one of the best villains of all time. You mentioned Hannibal Lecter, and it hit me that, okay, that one counts too. But
yeah, love him.
But he's still, Hans Gruber's up there. I just don't know that I can back down, though. She's so good.
And I can. So.
Okay, thank you.
I concede.
All right. So we got what? Hall versus Cavazos now.
Hall versus Cavazos.
Now we're both going to have to, because our brackets have been busted, we're going to have to make a choice. I know what I'm going with. I already had Rebecca Hall winning it against Robert Shaw, so I'm going Rebecca Hall. Who'd you have winning? Just curious. Did you have Rickman? You had Rickman, so you lost your winner.
I lost my winner.
So what do you think? Cavazos or Hall?
I'm going with Hall, really, for the accent. I mean, Lumi Cavazos was very in her element.
And these are very similar roles now.
They are.
They're both women who are...
Oppressed.
Oppressed in some way or another, yeah. And I feel for both of them, both of those characters. I want to give them both a hug and just say it's going to be okay.
I know. So, Rebecca Hall.
Rebecca Hall.
Yay! Rebecca Hall.
Oh, I love Rebecca Hall. One of my favorite actresses of all time. And you folks don't even know who she is. Shame on you.
And now, what a way to end.
Oh boy, this is the big one. More prestigious than the Academy Awards.
For sure.
Actually, And we put this one last for a reason, because it balances both the literature and the film, which is kind of what Real Lit does, right? We look at the book, we look at the film. So
exactly.
It seemed like to put them together, this should be the one.
Yep.
So here's the way we're going to do this one. We're going to call it Best Adaptation. The seating, just to put these in order, we did the most faithful to the original.
Right.
And that was pretty easy to do. Like Water for Chocolate, Wonder Boys, those two are almost beat for beat.
Yeah.
As White or Grosso Sea. And dialogue is lifted straight from the book into those. The Woman in Black changes a few points, but it's still pretty down the middle. Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
The second and third acts are completely different.
Yep.
At least the third act. But it still, I think, maintains some of the spirit.
Yeah.
But either way, The Birds, completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Different characters, different time setting. Die Hard / what the crap was that thing called?
Nothing Lasts Forever.
Yeah, I hated that book. Yeah, it's the plot is very similar, but the tonally, the changing of the names of the characters, yeah, all that's so different. We put it at 7, and then I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's completely, again, all the characters and the names are the same.
Yeah.
But that's it.
That is it.
Nothing else.
That is it.
So that's our 1-8. How are we going to pick these? This is tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got another Owl's Perch we're bringing in. We're going to start with Fidelity, the same thing we just did, but we're going to weight it much lower, right? So how close is the film? The plot, character, tones, themes, but we're going to bring other stuff in. Transformation. Some of these are potential. For instance, how badly I hate the book.
Right.
Nothing Lasts Forever, but I love Die Hard, one of my favorite films.
Right.
So how well did one transform the other? If it's a reimagining, how well was that done? Cinematic quality? Just how strong is the film on its own merit? Yeah, visuals, everything. How does the storytelling use? How does it make a good story? And then we got a wild card. Instinct. Je ne sais quoi.
Yep.
Just how it hits us. Our gut feeling. The undeniable magic, or lack thereof sometimes, that pushes a film up or down the ranking. And I think there'll be surprises here.
Yeah.
Because this
I surprised myself.
This is not the same thing as just Best Picture or Best Book. This is both together in tandem. It's going to be fun. I can't wait. So, 1 versus 8, Like Water for Chocolate, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I mean, come on. Like Water for Chocolate.
Like Water for Chocolate. That's not even a...
Yeah.
That's no fight there.
No offense.
Wonder Boys versus Die Hard.
Wonder Boys.
Wonder Boys, yet again. Again, I took into consideration how much the film changed the book and made it better, but I can't... Wonder Boys is so good.
It is.
So good. Wyatt Sargasso Sea versus The Birds. Not even close.
Wyatt Sargasso Sea.
Wyatt Sargasso Sea.
Agreed.
Woman in Black versus Jaws.
Jaws.
Jaws, yeah, absolutely.
Man, we crushed that.
We did. We're completely in agreement there. All right, here comes the big ones. Like Water for Chocolate versus Jaws. What you got?
I got Like Water for Chocolate.
I have Like Water for Chocolate.
Nice.
I cannot believe it. The shark was defeated.
I mean...
It was hard. But like,
it was hard.
Like Water for Chocolate is just so good.
It is, and they're both so good, and there's something, for lack of a better word... magical about it. Something that just draws you in.
Yeah, and it's magic realism.
Yeah, it's magic realism.
It's almost like that's intentional. But no, I totally agree with you. I could go back and watch that again tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, by the way, that it's a streaming series now? They reimagined it?
I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't seen it either. I forgot what streaming service it's even on, but I've got to watch that.
They better not.
Yeah, they better not mess it up.
I'll be sad.
Definitely, because, again, it's one of those, like, the movie's perfect.
Right.
Why would you do it again? But I'm still open to watching it.
Yeah.
It's like covering Stairway to Heaven, though. It's like, why?
Why? Just why redo it?
All right. Wonder Boys versus Wyatt Sargasso Sea.
I've got Wyatt Sargasso Sea.
I got Wonder Boys. The book, yes. Amazing. Again, it's working its way up there. Like top 5 maybe now of my all-time favorite books. And that's saying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The film adaptations, I like. I like them a lot. But I also acknowledge they're uneven. They're not as well done, and it's just the merits of those films detract from the greatness of the book. Wonder Boys is a great book, great movie, all the way around. So,
you know, I agree. Wyatt Sargasso Sea, the book, is by far my favorite over Wonder Boys. But if I put the Wonder Boys film and Wyatt Sargasso Sea films together, it's definitely Wonder Boys. And they're so evenly matched in terms of fidelity that I concede to Wonder Boys.
Okay. Excellent.
I do.
We have a battle.
Like Water for Chocolate versus Wonder Boys.
Right, which is the same thing I got at the end. Of course, you're having to alter yours just a little bit. I will tell you this. This hurt. This was hard. I struggled.
I ended up with Like Water for Chocolate as my winner.
I got Wonder Boys as my winner.
And I did not think I was going to be that way. Especially after going through some of the others, I did not. Honestly, part of it's instinct.
All right, I got to think about this. I don't know if I can concede. I'm considering it, which is saying a lot. Because you know how I feel about Wonder Boys. Again, one of my top three films. I love the book. Like Water for Chocolate is a masterpiece.
It is.
Can you think of any criticism like they could have done this better?
No, not between the two and just...
No, I mean, just like Water for Chocolate. Can you...
No. I'm
thinking lighting, cinematography, the acting choices.
The actors and actresses who played the parts.
Yes.
Totally fit.
The mise-en-scene, if we're going to be all stuffy about it. I cannot think of a single thing they could have done to make that film better. It is the closest we will ever see in perfection in cinema, I think.
And I just think that the book being so unique as well.
That is true.
The time frame and the recipes, 12 months, 12 recipes.
You bring in the history of the Mexican Revolution.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's very well written.
Beautifully done.
Wonder Boys is so good, though. So, okay, the book... I think what the film did is it cut a few things in the book that made the book drag just a little.
I understand that.
So I would concede the book drags. I don't know that Like Water for Chocolate is a book drags.
I don't think so.
I don't think it does.
And that's why... And I loved Wonder Boys. I loved reading it. I love academic novels.
Let's talk the film. I'll ask you the same question. Where could they have improved the film? I don't know that I have an answer.
I don't know. You know, I guess one of the hard parts for me there is that I can recall so many scenes distinctly from Like Water for Chocolate, but I struggle a little bit harder with Wonder Boys, other than the dog.
Well, the hood. That is tough to watch the dog. But.
And those two stand out to me, but they also had dramatic events. When I think about Like Water for Chocolate, I'm thinking about the dollhouse panscape. Like, I'm thinking about particular scenes in imagery and color. In Wonder Boys, I'm thinking, what actions? Like, I'm recalling the actor's actions rather than actual cinematography, I guess you could say.
Okay. Yeah, again, I can't say the same because I watch Wonder Boys at least once a year. And having seen it that many times, I cannot think of a single thing that you could improve on with it. But if we're looking at... All right, so the films are neck and neck, right? They're tied.
Right.
If we're looking at book... Like Water for Chocolate's the better book. I'm sorry, Michael Chabon.
I believe it.
I love you. I love everything you've written.
Right.
But Laura Esquivel wins that battle. All right. I'll give it.
Like Water for Chocolate. Best adaptation winner. And I remember us being so excited, but also kind of shocked when we met to podcast that one. Because we had so much to talk about.
I think it was one of our longer episodes, wasn't it?
And we just enjoyed both of them so much.
That is true. All right. Hey, that's great. So congratulations. Like Water for Chocolate.
Won a few awards, I think.
So for recapping, best film, Jaws.
Jaws.
Yay. Best book, Wide Sargasso Sea.
Wide
Sargasso Sea. Close.
100%.
Most hated character?
Mama Elena.
Mama Elena.
Love it. I love it. I
would have thought Jeanette Humphrey would have taken it over. Best supporting actor?
Claudia Robinson.
Yeah, again, I didn't have that written here. I forgot to update my bracket. Yep, that was a surprise to me. Outstanding performance.
Rebecca Hall.
All right. And best adaptation. I did not see that one coming.
Like Water for Chocolate.
Couldn't agree more. This was fun.
This was a lot of fun.
We need to do this more often.
Yeah. We'll hit them all against each other.
Knock 8 more episodes out and maybe do it again. Or we could even do a Sweet 16 and throw these back in it. That'd be a lot of fun.
Sweet 16, that would be fun.
That's the great thing about brackets. It's because you're pairing 1 and 8 and 2 and 7, and we're pairing them one way and then evaluating them another way. So sometimes, whereas you might have chosen something like one over another, they're not paired together. So you get all new matchup that you don't expect.
And it was difficult.
I like this.
But there are some that could be paired up where I would struggle.
Well, I struggled a lot in this to begin with. It was pretty tough, but hey, here we are. And, God, we disagree a lot, don't we?
But I love to disagree.
I do, too. I just wondered how it... I was like, is this really going to work? Because I just had this assumption that you and I were both going to, be on the same page consistently, and we weren't. That's good.
That's what I love about my class discussions, too. You know, you learn so much from when you disagree.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of academia.
Right.
It's to make a statement, try to support it, and somebody comes along and provides a counterargument.
Yep.
You refute the refutation. fun. This is good stuff.
Semi-academic fun.
It is, very much so. You could play this in a 112 class to teach about argumentation.
This is true.
I think we did well. And I'm looking forward to finally getting back to business.
Yes.
I've missed working with you.
Yeah. And you know, the crazy part is I haven't had time to watch the film. Like, that's what's...
And you've never seen it, have you?
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's so good. Well, I haven't... I've read the graphic novel. I haven't reread it. I read it when it... I don't know when it came out, but I read it somewhere down the line. Yeah, I'm looking forward to rewatching the film, too. I've not done my rewatch, so...
We'll get Sin City to you soon.
We will indeed. And as for shelf criticism... I said on the Lindsay wrap-up, our other special edition, that I was going to try to do that over spring break. You know what I did over spring break? All right, I took 3 days and did nothing.
Nice.
Right, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Tuesday, I was here in this office working.
Yep.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Guess where I was?
In here with you?
In this office working, and I still was behind.
Yeah.
I finally caught up, but I have not had a break. And I promise when I do get some breathing time, I will record and pick back up on shelf criticism. The good news, y'all know how I love Anora, right? I was calling it way before the Academy did. Sorry, Academy, I was here first. I love that film. It comes out on DVD April 29th. I will watch it. I'm going to do a podcast on it. I've got to talk about this film. It's so freaking good. I love it. Mikey Madison, one of my new favorite actors of all time.
I'm excited to hear you and analyze it.
Yeah, really? You got to watch it too.
I do need to watch it. I've been waiting for it to be free.
So good. Well, you can borrow my DVD. That's free.
That's true.
So we are coming back. Don't think the Owls of Palace just flew the coop.
Solid.
I'm going to run on those puns all the time. Well, the Final Four is about to start, about to tip off. And I hope the team you're pulling for wins, unless it's Duke. And I'm so sorry. We do have listeners in North Carolina. Sorry.
We support you all. Godspeed.
Unless they're North Carolina fans instead. If they're UNC fans, they're going to love this bashing of Duke. So there's that. Either way, I do like the baby blue of North Carolina better than the blue of Duke. So there's that. Although the mascot, Blue Devils, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, analyzing mascots could be fun.
For another podcast.
For another time.
We are coming back, though. That's the point. This is a ball.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
We busted a lot of brackets.
We'll be back with brackets.
Yeah. Busted more brackets than Gonzaga several years ago, didn't we?
Oh, man.
But we'll be back very soon to talk about Sin City, and then in May,
The Hunger Games
with a special guest.
More competition. Our special guest, Dr. Sydney Blaylock.
Yeah, and I get to read a book and watch a film I've never seen. So
yes, one of our beloved colleagues. And can you believe Stephen has not read or seen The Hunger Games?
Never
have.
Where
have you been?
I'm an adult. I don't really read YA fiction. I mean, not trying to be mean. It's just not something that normally appeals to me.
I feel like it's multi-generational.
Well, we'll find out.
I think it'll be canonized.
Okay.
I'll make that argument.
You've taught it, so yeah. I want to check it out. I'm coming with an open mind. I love Jennifer Lawrence. She's a wonderful actress.
And I would consider watching The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes before you watch the first Hunger Games.
That's the one that came out after.
Snow. Yeah. It's about one of the main characters.
Am I going to watch them all?
Yes.
God, that takes a lot of time.
You have now committed.
I didn't commit.
Yep, I'm committing you to watching all of them.
You know I can cut this out.
No, it's on record.
Oh, you can tell we missed each other because here we are bantering yet again. I guess we should say goodbye to the folks.
Yes, time to say goodbye.
The buzzer sounded.
And we will miss you.
Time to climb the ladder and cut the net if you're like water for chocolate.
Aww.
So, until next time.
Until next time, keep the wheels and the pages turning.
This has been an Owls of Palace production, bringing you close reads, hot takes, and the occasional literary meltdown over shark attacks. The executive producer of this special bracket episode is Reagan Babb, who somehow kept us organized while Stephen and Mackenzie debated whether Mama Elena or Jeanette Humphrey deserves a technical foul and ejection. Our theme music is Cat on the Porch by Nick Payne, whose laid-back groove anchors our chaos with just enough cool to keep the mic cables untangled. Whether we're dissecting metafiction or defending our irrational hatred of fictional characters, Nick's tune has become the unofficial soundtrack of scholarly nonsense. Thanks for listening to Shock Callers, the Real Lit Bracket episode. Visit reallippodcast.com or follow us on social media at reallippodcast to tell us what your bracket would look like. And if you think we got it wrong, shoot your shot, baller. We'll see you in the comments. Until next time, keep your shelves organized, your characters complicated, and your adaptations somewhere between faithful and feral.